The healthcare detective Frank Lally has written a book for Simon & Schuster about how to get affordable healthcare. Called Your Best Healthcare Now, it is available online, in-store, wherever fine books are sold. Mr. Lally is also the health correspondent for Parade, the former editor of Money and George magazines, and the senior advisor to healthcare.com. Here he is. Hi, Frank.
Hi, Jill. How are you?
Swell.
Okay, then that's good. So, look, we're going to talk about Connecticut's lousy COVID-19 testing performance again, because it continues. And today, I'm going to dissect this recent bad batch of 90 false positives. In particular, I want to tell you about Joe and Rita Spinella of Thomaston. They lived a nightmare that no family should have to go through. Now, Joe, he's a hairdresser, retired hairdresser. He's 83 years old. Lately, you know, his legs have been a little bit weak. It's been causing him some problems. So Rita, his loving wife of 60 years, brought him over to the local hospital at St. Mary's. And the doctors over there said, hey, you know, Joe, I really think you'd benefit from a few days of physical therapy. We're going to set that up for you. So Joe was admitted at Glendale Center nearby for some short-term therapy. All very routine, all correct. That was June 29th. 4 days later, on July 3rd, Joe was positive for COVID-19. Now, Joe had tested negative at St. Mary's, but over at Glendale, he got retested, and he's retested as all the new patients are over there. And guess what? He comes up positive. So Glendale immediately did the right thing in that circumstance. We've got a COVID patient. They transferred Joe to a nursing home with a COVID-only ward so he could be isolated. The Quinnipiac Valley Center in Wallingford. Now, Spinella family, obviously, very frightened about Joe. He's 83. He has COVID. Boy, terrible. And they're also angry because Quinnipiac is far away from where they live. When they drove over, they couldn't see Joe. No one was allowed to visit. Joe was out of sight on the second floor. Rita told me we couldn't even wave to him. So it's a very tight family, the Spinellas. They've got three children, three grandchildren. They did their best. They coped as best they could with these dark thoughts. As Joe's isolation in the COVID ward dragged on for 2 weeks. Then on Sunday, July 19th, Rita got word through Quinnipiac that, oops, Joe's test was wrong. It was a false positive. Joe never had COVID. Now, that left the family relieved. That's the first emotion. Oh, Joe doesn't have COVID. That's great. But also angry about the ordeal they just went through, and Joe just went through. Plus, they had new worries. Did Joe catch the highly contagious virus in the COVID ward? He was in there for 2 weeks. And if not, how soon can Joe come home? Or at least get him out of that COVID ward now. So, Jill, that's the story up to now. What do you make of this story?
Just the horror of execution.
Yeah. And yeah, something. And it's just, I mean, you shouldn't have these kind of batches of false positives like that. And I'll explain that in a minute about on some retesting that they did just by chance. But guess what? Here's where Joe's story took another bad turn. First, people at Quinnipiac said they didn't have a room for Joe outside of the COVID room. Sorry, it's kind of the COVID ward. Sorry, he's got to stay another night. The next day, they said Joe had to stay because he has a fever and a cough, even though Joe had been retested at Quinnipiac at that point. By that point, and he had retested negative for the virus. He doesn't have COVID, but he's still stuck in that COVID ward. Now, that made no sense to Rita. She's a former paralegal. She's very sharp. She said to me, "They said Joe had a temperature of 99." That's not a fever to me. That's not a fever to me either, by the way. All hospitals I've ever been in, it's 100.4. That's a fever. 99 is not. They also said Joe was coughing. Well, Rita says that's common. He coughs. But Joe was stuck. He was stuck in that dangerous COVID ward for another night. Joe was finally sent home on Thursday, July 23rd. That's a full 4 days after Quinnipiac was told about the false positives, including Joe's. Now, Joe's home, Rita said, look, he lost a lot of weight at Quinnipiac, but she's fattening him up with macaroni. Rita said she's a very proud Sicilian-American. She told me, Joe ate two bowls of macaroni last night, and tonight I'm making a macaroni and cauliflower, which he loves. By the way, I love it too. My wife makes it for me, and I eat at least two bowls, believe me. So the Spinellas are doing the best they can. They're a wonderful family. They're trying to turn the page, get on with their lives, forget this ordeal. But their nightmare leaves us with questions that demand answers. The Department of Health is investigating the false positives, and Representative Jonathan Steinberg said his public health committee may investigate as well. So, Jill, what's the top question that comes to your mind, either for the Department of Health or for Steinberg?
How do you make this stop?
Yeah, that's a good question. They need to get to the bottom of it. Rita asked this question. She said, look, Joe's just once one of 90 false positives. What happened to the other 89? Now, that's especially important because the bad batch of tests came from a favored lab. This is a lab that got a corner-cutting okay from the Trump administration. And the false positives were mainly among vulnerable residents and staff in senior living facilities. So how many of the falsely positive residents were moved, like Joe, into a COVID-only ward and, unlike Joe, actually caught the COVID? Did that happen? And did any of those false positives die? That would be a real tragedy. Now, there are press reports out that at least one false positive resident did die, but he was in hospice, so maybe COVID was not a factor in his death. Now, why he was getting tested for COVID while he was in hospice, I may never find out. But anyway, he did die, but he was in hospice at that point. So I reached out to the Department of Health. I had a bunch of questions, and Quinnipiac, and some key lawmakers. I've got a list of questions, and I sent them to them all. And I got some responses. But here's everything we need to know. Why doesn't the Department of Health have a rule mandating that the COVID facilities retest COVID patients before admitting them and keeping them in quarantine in COVID wards for at least 2 weeks? You come in as a COVID patient, you get isolated, quarantined for at least 2 weeks. Now, Glendale Center, the rehab facility, retested Joe, even though he had just tested negative over at St. Mary's Hospital. Now, the fact is, COVID nursing homes have an incentive to just take COVID patients and keep them. The state pays the homes an extra $620 a day for each COVID patient. So the longer Joe stayed, the more of that windfall Quinnipiac collected. That's a fact. Next, in light of the false positives by the company, this is a company called Thermo Fisher Scientific, is the state double-checking other Thermo results? The state lab discovered Thermo's bad batch by chance. Believe me, it was just luck. Shouldn't the state launch a thorough examination of Thermo's tests? Now, for all I know, maybe they have, but the Department of Health hasn't told me that or the public. In addition, did the FDA's emergency authorization to Thermo contribute in any way to the false positives? They're cutting a corner. Is that a factor here? And did the Lamont administration waive any rules, cut any corners for Thermo as well? Now, look, I trust the state's chief operating officer, a guy named Josh Gabal. I think he's an honorable guy. I'm trusting that. But still, as Connecticut's chief operating officer and a former Thermo vice president, did he recuse himself from Connecticut awarding a contract to Thermo? And has he promised to stay out of the Department of Health investigation and anything additional that might come from Steinberg's public health committee? Has he done that? I don't know. Okay, let's get back to Joe and Rita. They're a great couple. Love talking about them. Except in this terrible context. What does the Department of Health have to say about Quinnipiac keeping Joe in a COVID-only ward for 3 days after Quinnipiac knew that he had been tested falsely positive? Right? What are people saying? I mean, look, consider these contradictions. Quinnipiac staff said Joe had to stay because he had COVID-like symptoms. That's a fever of 99. I don't think that's a fever, but 99, and a cough. On the other hand, they're looking for a room for him. They just can't find one outside the COVID ward. Something doesn't add up here. Look, and even if it's just one extra night that Joe had to stay in that COVID-only ward, that's one dangerous night. He's in a private room, but he's surrounded by people who have COVID, patients who have COVID. He is surrounded by nurses who are going into COVID rooms, doing the best they can to treat people, and then coming into his room. That's dangerous. No one wants to spend 15 minutes in a COVID ward, let alone an extra night, let alone 2 weeks. And finally, doesn't the Lamont administration owe each of the 90 affected people personal apologies? And shouldn't they have had these apologies by now? Rita said the Glendale administrator apologized, but he's the only person she's heard from. She hasn't heard from anyone else. She said to me, yes, I think the administration should apologize to me and to Joe. And you know what? I agree. And if the Lamont administration is listening, I've got the telephone number. We can get in touch with me. I'll give you their phone, and you can give them a ring. I've got their email. You can give them a ring. You should do that today, actually. So, Jill, that's the false positive. And it's, in a way, chilling, because this was just something that was caught by chance when they were doing some batch testing down at the state lab, and they needed positives to do the retest. And guess what? 90 of these things came back falsely positive. Now, how much more of that went on in this state? We've been grappling with this for a couple of months. Is there a pattern here? And how can the Department of Health and the state lab get to the bottom of it and stop it immediately? So that are my thoughts. This administration is not doing a very good job with COVID-19 testing. We keep talking about it, but they keep messing it up. And that's why we keep talking about it. So your thoughts on this lovely day?
Ditto.
Ditto. Let's move on to happier stuff. So my family's finally going to join me again here for the month of August. They're all coming in, and they're retesting before they get here, so we're all safe. We're worried about relatives from Rhode Island. You see a spike there, and we were hoping we could be joined by our sister-in-law, but I'm starting to get nervous about that. Maybe you saw the stories today about that spike in Rhode Island, and the fact that the Lamont administration is actually thinking about adding Rhode Island to the quarantine list. That would be a real complication. We think about that.
I am noticing two things. I'm noticing that there are a lot of states on the quarantine list, and I'm noticing that a lot of people are moving around. So
yes,
that's
yes.
Just yes, you can either touch those wires together or not.
Yeah, and we've talked about this. I mean, asking people to self-quarantine and also to fill out a form so that we can trace and track you if you turn up negative during that, if you turn up positive for COVID during the quarantine, it's just a request at the end of the day. That's simply a request. People coming in by bus, by train. The guy who runs the Bradley Airport, and we've talked about this, but I'll talk about it again. I mean, he had a good idea. Let's test at least the people, and that's about 1,000 a day flying in from COVID states, or high infection states anyway. Let's test them at the airport so we know where we stand immediately, and people don't have to self-quarantine if they don't come up positive. And secondly, and if they do, we can track and trace. We can really isolate the people who need to be isolated and track and trace. I thought that was a reasonable idea. Lamont just never even got back to the head of Bradley on that point. Just pushed on with his volunteer. It's just a program asking people to volunteer to do it, and then they'll spot check by the Department of Health. Department of Health is understaffed. It's been underfunded for more than a decade. All kinds of administrations have done that. They don't have the money to track and trace COVID patients or potential COVID patients coming into this state. Who's kidding who here? And you look at the map, and the map keeps getting redder and redder. It's like it's surrounding the northeast corner that we're in. Right now, we're in great shape, and certainly relative to everyone else. But that it is creeping closer and closer. And if you get within 200 miles, when we're talking about Rhode Island, within 200 miles, it's already in Delaware, where people are quarantined, Washington, D.C., you know, we're okay for today. We're okay for tomorrow, perhaps next week. But boy, you got to keep your eye on this, and it makes you nervous. So here's, take something positive out of this threat. Wear your mask. Wash your hands. Don't take any risk. Be careful if you go into a store. Go to places where everyone's wearing a mask. Don't go into a store where the proprietor isn't wearing a mask, these dry cleaners and whatnot that I've been in. You see that, you know what? Don't even open the door. Get back in your car and drive home. If you're going to go to eat outside the home, okay, that might be possible in some places with outdoor dining and spacing. We did it last night. We drove over to Tivoli. We ate outside with a couple of longtime friends of ours. We were at one end of a picnic table. They were on the other. We kept our masks handy. Everyone in the restaurant was wearing a mask. I was careful when anybody came over to put a dish down or a glass of wine for us, that I wore my mask to protect them. So there are things that can be done, but do it with care. Be careful. This virus is alive, it is attacking, and it is around us. Don't kid yourself for a minute that it is not. So I hope that's at least a little positive note on this otherwise disturbing little episode we had today. I will say this, I was very glad to have a couple of long conversations with Rita Spinella. And wish Joe well. They are, you know, they're wonderful people and a really tight family, and they deserve the best.
And we wish them the best. Thank you, Frank, the healthcare detective and senior advisor to healthcare.com. Send your questions or concerns about finding affordable healthcare to healthcaredetective@robinhoodradio.com. Frank will try to address as many of your questions as he can on future broadcasts. Also, look for his book, Your Best Healthcare Now, available online, in-store, on my desk.